Let's travel back to the 1990s with this scene from Seinfeld. We're in a diner.
What'll you have?
I'll have the turkey club without the bacon. And I'll have the bacon club without the turkey.
George, don't make me get tough with you.
Why, you think you can beat me up?
You wouldn't want me to mess up that beautiful face of yours.
Stop. George is smitten.
You don't want bacon. I'll surprise you.
Wow, is she not terrific?
She does have a way.
You think she thinks I have a beautiful face, or is she just saying that?
Well, they do work on tips.
Ah, such a cringeworthy scene. I'm Gina Kaufman, and this morning, we're putting tipping back on the table. People have been making all kinds of cases against tipping. They say tipping lets employers off the hook, encourages discrimination and harassment, that tips don't necessarily reflect the quality of service as much as we think they do. The no tipping movement is getting mixed reviews from diners and servers alike, but it does bring up important questions about gender, race, and class in the restaurant world. We're talking about all of it on KCUR's Central Standard. Call 816-235-2888 to weigh in. Let's start with the server's perspective. Erin McZee, good morning.
Good morning.
You're the general manager of a restaurant which shall remain nameless, but you used to be a server and bartender. Tell me a little bit about that experience. What drew you to it?
So I grew up in theater, and one of the places that I could think of that I would make money based on how personable I could be and how entertaining I could be was serving. My parents were both in the restaurant industry. So it was a long time draw. I started when I was 16 years old. I was a host before that. I served from 16 to 21. I bartended for 2 years and I've managed ever since.
So did you like working for tips?
I did like working for tips. I have always really enjoyed entertaining people and being able to make them laugh and make them smile. And I knew that the more I could do that, the more money I would make. So that was definitely an appeal for me.
But would you say that there were any downsides, or if not downsides, just sort of unusual dynamics that come from reliance on tips, from that particular relationship with your customers?
I mean, I definitely think that it creates an environment where you end up swallowing your pride.
Explain that.
Every once in a while. So, you know, you go to a table, and for instance, I had a table in Chicago, and I went up to this table, and I was talking to them, and he looked at me and said, you're not from here, are you? I said, no, I'm not. He said, where are you from? I said, Kansas. He said, oh, you look corn-fed. And you know, I laughed. You know, I laughed because I was at my table, and if I had not been at my table, I would not have laughed. And you know, I don't necessarily think that I took offense at it, and I don't think that I felt belittled by it. I think it creates a dynamic where people feel entitled to say whatever they're thinking, regardless of whether they would say it in normal public decorum.
Yeah, entitlement from tipping. I mean, that is an interesting thing. One of the arguments people are making right now against tipping is tied up in the Me Too movement. And it's this whole idea that tipping puts especially female servers in the really difficult position of feeling like they have to put up with harassment if they want to get paid. Like if someone's making suggestive comments, their tips would suffer if they spoke up.
Sure. And I mean, I understand where that idea comes from and how some people might feel that way. But I really feel the onus of that falls on the employer. You know, I myself, when I was serving, I never allowed people to talk to me that way.
What did you do? How did you not allow it?
So I actually carried a spoon in my back pocket. And if guys would become too handsy, I would actually rap them on the knuckles with the spoon. And
How did that affect your tips?
It didn't most of the time, to be totally honest, because they always thought it was funny. You know, they always were like, oh, okay, I guess I won't do that.
But did you think it was funny?
No, I didn't think it was funny. But I also never worked for an employer for very long that didn't support me in not allowing people to talk to me that way. And I really think that that's where the crux of it is if you work in a restaurant where the management team and the ownership are okay and not just okay, but insist on a zero tolerance policy as far as, you know, sexual harassment, discrimination, things like that, then it doesn't matter. You know, it won't be allowed because people will learn that they're not always right.
How do you deal with this as a manager? I mean, I can't imagine that you're working in an environment where servers never come to you with this kind of thing.
No, of course not. And they come to me with this because they know that I will then go talk to the table and tell them that they can either stop or they can leave. There's been this theory in the restaurant industry for forever that the guest is always right. And my personal opinion is that the reasonable guest is always right. As long as somebody's being a reasonable human being and behaving in a way that they would towards any other human being outside of that area, then yeah, they are right. They're there. That's how we make our money. That's what they're there for, you know. But when they become unreasonable, when they become, you know, more like children or animals, then they're not right anymore. And I have no problem asking them to leave.
But just to play devil's advocate here, because we are talking about, like, the complexities of the tipping relationship, do you think tipping does kind of give the customer more power than they would normally have? It feels like it would be hard to say, okay, you make a living off tips, which are totally at the customer's discretion, but no, the customer is not always right.
Sure. I get where you're coming from on that, too. I as a server, that $5, that $10, that's not worth what you're doing to me right now. Like, you know, and that's where I say the employer should be backing them up. I mean, it's always going to be a server's call, whether they're uncomfortable or not, because every person has different sensibilities. If somebody's like, no, I don't care, you know, then they don't care. And that's fine. They can make their money how they want. I cared. And I care as a manager. And so anybody that works for me, if they're uncomfortable in any way, I immediately come get me.
So in the balance, it sounds like you are pro tipping.
I am.
What is it that you like about it? What is it that the stories about, wrapping people on the knuckles, for example, what does that miss?
What I like about tipping is that, if I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing at my job and I'm making sure that you are getting fed good food in a timely manner, that I'm an entertaining person, that I'm giving you the hospitality, because that's really what it's about is the hospitality, then I'm going to make more money. I'm going to be able to provide more for my family, for myself. I'm going to be able to go home with an extra few dollars. And at that same time, I have the ability to choose to not allow you to speak to me in a fashion that I'm not a servant. I'm a server. There's a difference.
So does that mean that if someone is being rude to you, you feel like you can say, well, I'm going to accept that I might not get tipped by this person and I'm going to respond how I want, rather than being maybe more answerable to an employer? You're answerable to yourself? Is that what?
No, I do believe you're answerable to your employer. And like I said, you do tend to swallow your pride on things that are just rude. I'm not talking about people who are just being kind of rude, like the guy with the corn-fed comment. I'm talking more about people who are saying things like, you know, what's the most satisfactory thing on the menu besides you? That kind of thing. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that happens a lot. Things like that. And just, you know, for anybody who's listening, guys, it's not cute. But it does. It happens often. And those are the kinds of situations where I, as an employer, would be perfectly willing to go over and say, no, you don't talk to my server that way.
And so, but you do, you felt as a server that you went home with more money if you did a better job?
Yeah, I did.
That's interesting because some of the data that's being passed around lately implies that, at least from to the extent that that can be measured, that it seems like the correlation between the size of tips and the quality of service is kind of weak.
I don't necessarily think it's as far as each table. I'm talking about, like, so if I'm better at my job than the next server, I'm going to have more tables than them. So it's not necessarily for me, from my perspective, the percentage of the tip so much as how many tips I got to have.
Interesting.
So better at my job, meaning I got more customers.
How do you get more customers by being the better server.
Okay, so if you're faster, if you're more accurate with the computer, if you can turn your tables faster by making sure that everything is coursed out properly, if you can have the personality to move them along at the end of the meal, like it's all about timing. It's all about personality. It's all about controlling the table pace, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, those kinds of things get you more tables.
If you have worked for tips, call 816-235-2888 with your story. How did it work for you? And what do you think the average customer might not get about this whole dynamic from your perspective? 816-235-2888. And I'll be asking for diners' perspectives a little later. I want to go now to Steve DeBlanica. He's with us by phone, and he used to have a blog called Waiter Rant when he was waiting tables. That was kept anonymously. He later revealed his true identity, and he's recently taken on the tipping issue in a book called Keep the Change, A Clueless Tipper's Quest to Become the Guru of Gratuity. Steve, hello.
Hi, Gina.
So you seem to know a lot about the history of tipping, why we even do this in restaurants when we don't do it anywhere else. Can you trace it back for us a little?
Oh, sure. Tipping probably started quite simply as begging. You know, you would be traveling the roads of Europe and you would throw a beggar a few coins to leave you alone. And it's interesting that the Persian word for tip is bakshish, which also means giving alms or a bribe. And anyone who's worked in the restaurant industry knows that a tip is all of those things. And at some point, in a probably around time of Henry VIII, the way people partied back then was they would travel from manor to manor, and they would in turn tip the servants at that manor, you know, the scullery maids, the person who emptied the chamber pot or shod their horses, and they would give them something called a veil, just a little something to express their gratitude. But an interesting thing happened. The servants began to expect these veils as a matter of course. They had their hand out. They're like, where is it? And then it became an issue that people said, you know, if you don't give them the veil, something bad's going to happen. Like, you know, they might throw the chamber pot on your head, or your horse is going to be lame or something like that. So very early we see a fear of what happens when you don't tip.
Is that, I mean, that's sort of an interesting thing, because it seems like it's a fear rooted in like deep suspicion of people which, so you've worked in restaurants, and my observation of the people I have known who work in restaurants has been that they care a lot about the food that they provide and the service they provide. And it's sort of interesting that there's this perception out there that someone would want to spit in your food, or you know what I mean?
What really happened was, it was around the 1920s in Chicago, some waiters got very tired of being mistreated by people. This is a true story. You can look it up. And they put poison in the food, and they killed several people. And that really happened.
So whoa.
That made all the newspapers, yeah. And so people were like, you know, they're going to do something to your food in the back if you're mean to them or if you don't tip. And I was a waiter for about nine years, and I never adulterated food. I certainly never, you know, spit in the food, because my theory was, if I can't give this to my mom, I'm not giving it to you. But I have pretty good self-control, and I thought about doing it, you know, but
why?
I never did. But I know, because as your previous caller was saying, the people could be very, very rude, unbelievably so. I mean, she was getting some pretty juvenile comments from her male customers. But I had people come up to me and say, you know, he's only a waiter. Or, you know, I remember people saying, you know, I hope I don't end up like you. You know, you would get some seriously deranged people.
So like classist, basically.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my favorite was a lady, I'll never forget, it was right after 9/11, and I'm in a restaurant, and we heard a loud bang outside. It was a car backfiring, and a lady literally jumped into my arms and asked me, are you going to keep me safe? And I remember looking at her going, lady, I'm running out the door. Something's happening. You know, she actually thought, not only am I her waiter, I'm going to be her protector. I was like, no, I'm out of here. So people have amazingly outsized expectations of what the role of a waiter is. The waiter is to bring you your food, give you a pleasant experience, make you feel welcome, but like your previous guest said, reasonable guests.
You know,
then you would have just people who bring their psychosis to the restaurant.
You argue that the quality of service people get in a restaurant actually has almost nothing to do with the size of tip they leave.
Zero. As a guy once told me, a statistician said, service, perception of service affects your tip at the same level as whether the sun is shining or not affects your tip. So it has no effect. And my theory is that everything is about relationships. And when you are in, you're dealing with a waiter, you're in a micro relationship, you know, even for the hour or two you're there. And somehow how you deal with the waiter reveals a lot about how you deal with other relationships in your life. And, you know, there's the old saying, girls, watch what the man tips on the date. Because if he's cheap with someone who's powerless, what is he going to do with you? How is he going to be generous with you? CEOs have watched how people interact with waiters and busboys and janitors and people like that to see what is the character of the person they're dealing with. So tipping is governed by unseen processes going on in the customer's head. And that affects how they tip. So like I always tell people, we all have an uncle who always buys himself nice things, but at Christmas he gives nothing. You know, these are the people that usually are not going to tip. But then you're going to see people who used to be in the business, they're going to tip large. Anyone who's worked for a living, anyone who has a decent connection, you know, with people, reasonable people. I really like how she said it. The reasonable customer is always right. Reasonable people who understand this is a job, this is a business, you're doing your best, and they tip. And they usually tip between 15 and 20% without fail.
You know, we have talked about how tipping affects servers. What about customers? Are there, for example, assumptions about how certain types of people will or won't tip, and do those assumptions affect service?
Oh, yes, that's an entirely different show. You know,
and but, we'll be getting into it.
Yeah, there are, well, among waiters, there are conceptions that certain groups of people will be bad tippers, and you know, there's a constant stereotype that was. That you know, African Americans are bad tippers. You know, there's the stereotype that the after church crowd are bad tippers. Teachers are bad tippers. Women are bad tippers. So people have the servers have these ideas in their head.
People who order just water. I remember that from working in a restaurant. If you order just water.
Yeah. Oh.
Oh, water people.
Well, my favorite is they ask for water, then they ask for lemon, then they ask for sugar. And I'm like, you want your own grapes so you can press your own wine? I mean, what are you doing here? You know, come on, give me a break. But usually those are the stereotypes that people walk in. And what I found as a waiter was almost, you know, sometimes you would, it's the two ladies who are drinking lemon water. They split a chicken Caesar salad. The tip's lousy. But very often you would find people that would surprise you. You'd walk in, you'd think, oh, this is going to be miserable, and they would leave you a fantastic tip, you know, and then you realize it probably has very little to do with you, because I've given bad service and gotten good tips, and I've given good service and gotten bad tips. It has almost nothing to do with the waiter. It has everything to do with the person, the customer.
Well, I want to hear, you know, Steve, thank you so much. This has been great talking to you, and I'm going to get to a caller and we're going to move forward. But yeah, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Steve is the author of a book called Keep the Change, and it is about tipping. But we're going to go now to Joe in Kansas City, who wants to weigh in on what we just brought up. Hi, Joe.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, hi. How's it going?
Good. How about you? What do you want to share?
I just wanted to kind of talk about my perceptions of tipping. I've been working in like front of house for most of my 20s. I'm 28 now. And personally, as a guy who works off of tips, I really don't think it's a good system. I think it perpetuates a lot of class and race systems that aren't really good in our society.
How does it do that?
In the back of house of any kitchen, you see a lot of people of color. You see white people up front. You see a lot of people with personal neglect in the back. And, I mean, we know, like, with class, if people aren't paid very well, they can't take care of themselves. And it just kind of perpetuates a system where poor people stay poor. A lot of the places where I've worked off of tips, I've had to tip out the back of house to supplement the low wages that the people in the back are getting. And I think a lot of people in the front of the front of house like the tipping culture because they know that it's a way to make really good money without maybe a lot of investment in education. A lot of the people in front of house are from higher class, like middle class or upper class homes, and people in the back of house are from lower class homes, and it just kind of perpetuates a system that's pretty negative all around. And I think just the owners of the restaurant should just pay everybody, and people should be compensated for their work, and the food should pay for that.
Well, Joe, thank you so much. And we are going to pick right up on this thread about discrimination after the break. Call with your tipping stories at 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman, KCUR Central Standard. We'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard, and we're talking about tipping in restaurants. Is this a good system or not? And what are some of the dynamics it creates between servers and customers, servers and their bosses, diners and their dining experience, etc.? 816-235-2888 is the number to call to weigh in. I'm joined now by KCUR's race and culture reporter, Michelle Tyreen Johnson. And Michelle, we were just hearing some comments about stereotypes in tipping. Can you jump in here?
Well, it's funny because I'm working on a show that's running this week on dining discrimination, and it's from the perspective of particularly blacks who eat out in restaurants. And it's of course triggered by some of the recent events that have happened with people who've dined out. But and one of the big numbers, which isn't a surprise to probably any black person I know, is that in a study of over 1,000 servers nationally, 53% admit that they give worse service to black patrons.
Based on the stereotype that was just referenced about tipping?
That's part of it, but 53% is 53% admit that up front. And what's fascinating to me about the whole concept of tipping is it's a trend. It's based on the transaction. So you don't tip somebody when you sit down. The tipping occurs after the transaction has occurred. So any conclusion you're coming to about someone has got to be based on something other than the actual transaction.
The behavior of the tipper.
Right. So, I mean, that's the thing that gets, I think, lost in these discussions all the time. There's no rational way to figure out how somebody's going to tip unless they're a regular.
So you recently addressed this stereotyping issue in your Facebook feed about tipping.
Oh, yeah. My Facebook feed is my little mini laboratory for discussion.
So tell us the story of what you asked and how it all unfolded.
Well, I was working on this story and it just, you know, hit me how many times as a black person I have over-tipped. And I'm embarrassed to say, to feel as if I was compensating for the stereotype that blacks aren't going to tip. And so I put as a Facebook question, okay, this is just from my black friends, which is always interesting because, of course, everybody else wants to, you know, and I cut that off at the pass. But I ended up having, it was over 100 comments of my black friends where it was a really robust conversation where I'd say about 60% of them say, I know about that stereotype. I don't tip according to it. And about, I'd say, roughly 40% who came clean, that's the way I put it, and said, yeah, I'm embarrassed to say that's exactly what I do.
That they also overtip.
Overtip to compensate for the stereotype that they know exists from the second they walk in a restaurant.
So as you have reported this feature, have you gotten the sense that 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 stereotype does affect how people are generally treated in restaurants?
Well, one of the things I talked to a researcher out of Wayne State in Detroit, and he made the really good point that even though servers will report that they give worse service, 53%, I should say, 53%, that, you know, 47% don't, but that more than half give worse service, you as a diner may not even know that you're getting worse service. So it made me think of all the times as a Black person, whether I've eaten alone, whether I've eaten with one other Black person, a group of Black people, or with my white friends, how I can feel the difference in treatment and service. And yet you can't prove it. You can't go, it sure is taking them just a tinge too long to get to me, to give me more water. Or I ask for something and it's taken them a while. As you're looking around, I mean, I could tell you multiple stories of seating issues, going with the friend who's Black and having to wait when we don't have a reservation, while whites without a reservation also get seated. So, I mean, that happens. And as one of the people I interviewed say, you don't want to assume what it's about, but when you've seen it, experienced it, heard about it, and now there's a study that has supported what I've thought my entire adult life, I mean, there you go.
So do you also see, we had that caller who was talking also about the relationship between the front of the house and the back of the house, or just the idea that the sort of staffing traditions of the restaurant world can themselves be perhaps discriminatory.
That's so true. I mean, when he said that, it just pops into mind how many times I've gone out to eat. I mean, heck, a dozen times in 2018 alone, where I've looked and I've seen brothers and sisters working, cooking, while it was white people getting my tip. It happens, and you see it, and you see it a lot, and there's a discrepancy. And again, you know, I was a server for 2 days of my life.
2 days.
I have worked since the age of 14 in multiple professions and jobs. I lasted as a waitress for 2 whole days. It's a hard job. And yet it's a job that is so dependent on everybody else's perception of you in terms of what you rely on. I mean, at the end of the day, working at KCUR, my paycheck's going to be the same whether you like me today or not, Gina. But in a server, you know, diner relationship, it's a different story.
And yeah, maybe there's more pressure to fulfill expectations. And
right.
Well, I want to turn to David Hayden. He's a local writer who's also been a waiter. And he is, if you don't mind my saying so, David, you seem to be pro-tipping.
I'm very pro-tipping.
Yeah. He's
how I survived for 20 years.
The author of Tips Squared, Tips for Improving Your Tips. And David, you know, how do you respond? I mean, there's such a wide range of criticisms of tipping these days. How do you respond to all of those?
You know, I like to paraphrase Winston Churchill when he said, democracy is the worst form of government except for everything else we've ever tried. Quite frankly, if we got rid of tipping and we got rid of this 20%, this 18-20% that comes from the guest without passing through the restaurant, that is considered direct income to the server and is only taxed once by the IRS, if we take out that percentage and we throw it through the restaurant where it's taxed as revenue, it's paid out in payroll taxes, this number just keeps getting smaller. And so what you end up with is an occupation that is 1 out of 8 working Americans, and, you know, it, or is the 8th largest occupation, 1 out of 6 working Americans, and is the highest paying occupation for someone who's fresh out of school, someone who doesn't have an education, and is a career path where you can start with no formal training, no formal education, and work up through the ranks to where you can make an income where you're able to support yourself and a family. When we take that tipping away, we lose that career path. We lose that opportunity that is vital to so many Americans.
Is that what they have witnessed in restaurants that have gone no tipping?
Well, when you go no tipping, okay, in order to do that, you have to pay the full minimum wage, which means on a federal level, the minimum wage for servers has been stuck at $2.13 since 1991. It has not been increased on the federal level in 27 years. So when you have that, you have to all of a sudden increase the pay of the server up to the federal minimum wage, which is a $5.13 an hour income. I mean, you're over tripling the amount of money that the restaurant pays for each server. So in turn, what you have is you make sure that your servers are working less hours, and that money that they do receive in tips gets split amongst the entire staff rather than just the server. In the end of the day, that means that the server makes less money.
But it, also, it might mean that the person in the back of the house makes more.
Right. But as soon as they start receiving a portion of the tips, what you find is that they get paid less per hour. So instead, the person who has no interaction with the guest, has no contact with the guest, is receiving a portion of the tip, and their income is now dependent upon it because they're making less per hour. And the person who is in front of the guest has less incentive because they're no longer receiving any more of the tip than anyone else in the restaurant. And so the service that happens to the guest goes down because there's no incentive to provide that exceptional service.
The incentive argument is really interesting to me because most professions in the United States, I mean, there are other professions besides servers that make tips, people who do hair. I mean, there are a lot of them. Mm-hmm. But still, most people, I would say, like, do their jobs and have some incentive to do them well without tips.
They have an incentive to do enough to not get fired. But the ability to go out and give exceptional service, to give you the treatment that you want when you go out for your anniversary, when you go out to celebrate a birthday, when you have a wedding reception, when you have those special moments in your life, when you're looking for that little bit more, if you compare the service that you receive at a restaurant, especially at a nice restaurant, to the service you receive at a casual dining place or when you go to the DMV, or when you go to any number of places that, you know, are just a flat salary, you expect more from that server. You expect an additional level of friendliness and accommodation. And that's what you get from a tipping system.
Aaron, I mean, what?
I just wanted to point out, yeah, one of the studies I saw that's interesting, though, to that point, is that when you look at where servers are hired at the finer dining restaurants, it tends to be white males. Whereas at the what they call the casual restaurant, where you might be less likely to go to for those big moments, it's people of color and women. And so obviously the more expensive the restaurant, the bigger the tip. So, I mean, I just want to throw in there's that issue.
And I would love to address that issue because that's incredibly important. And we are in full agreement on that. And from 20 years in the industry and now working as a consultant to restaurants, the issue is that it's very tough to get people of color applying in front of the house positions. It's in a lot of cases, it's the number of applications coming through. And so you start at the bottom level because the restaurant industry is a situation where you train yourself. You move up through the ranks. I started out in 1995 cleaning peanut shells off the floor of a bar and grill and serving $5 hamburgers and $2 beers before I got up to the nicer restaurants. We need to see more inclusion in that area so as that you can promote yourself up and get hired on at the nicer restaurants. I think there's a very large push amongst a lot of progressive restaurateurs to address this, but there have to be the applications coming through the door. And I think that it's something that as an industry, I mean, as an industry, especially on the hourly level, it's a very progressive and liberal industry that we want to do more. But there have to be the applications coming through, and I encourage, you know, that increase to happen.
Well, I mean, no disrespect, but every profession in America says that. I mean, that's always the reason why there's the talk that there's not more diversity. Well, enough people don't apply. Well, which is it? I mean, is it that more people don't apply because they don't get the jobs? So they don't get the jobs, so that impacts whether they apply for the jobs that are open. So, I mean, that may be the case that restaurants say that they want at the finer dining places that they want to have more people of color. But considering how many people of color out there who are servers, clearly if finer restaurants wanted to have more of those people, they would have them. Sorry. I mean, that's just my observation as someone who eats out from every place from Chipotle on up to places where I have to leave a tip that probably is more than I make in an hour. So
you are wanting to jump in here, Aaron?
I mean, as a restaurateur, as a manager, I try very hard to maintain diversity amongst my staff, whether that is race, whether that is sexuality, whether that is gender, whether that is age. I try to make sure that everybody has, you know, an equal opportunity when they come in and apply. They go through two interviews, everybody does, and then they talk with me before they come on. And my interviews are always a little unorthodox, because my interviews are more, I'm having a conversation with you, because if I don't enjoy my conversation with you, why would I want you to have a conversation with my guests? You know, my bar manager, my service manager, they ask all these technical questions. And I have found, I have not found there to be a giant gap in the applications. I have found there to be a giant gap in whether those applications come in for front of house or back of house. So I think that that stereotype that we're discussing is so deeply ingrained that people don't apply for the job that they don't think they can get. And I very much encourage people to try. I mean, please put in an application.
But that's the key thing you said. They don't apply for the jobs they don't they think don't they think can, they can get. That's
exactly.
That's my point.
Right. And I 100% agree with mm-hmm. you. You know, and that all comes down to training for me. Like, I am a huge believer in training. I always have been. I think that any applicant can be turned into anything with the right amount of training and input. And so I wouldn't say that I see less applications, but I would agree with David that I don't get a lot for the front of house, and almost everyone I'm please come talk to me.
Can I jump in here and bring this back to tipping? And Michelle, I wonder if you found anything about how race affects, you talked about the servers of color out there, like the tips that they receive.
I mean, I have not researched that extensively, but the research I've come across says that people of color receive less tips than white waiters, and not just from white customers, that they just receive less tips, period, regardless of who the diner is, which is sad.
Well, we are going to get right back to this conversation about tipping, anything and everything about tipping. At this point, the gates are open, 816-235-2888. You can also tweet us. We are at KCURCST. I'm Gina Kaufman. We'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman here with Aaron McZee, David Hayden, and Michelle Tyrene Johnson. We're talking about tipping in restaurants, whether it's good, bad, or something more nuanced in between. 816-235-2888 is the number our listeners have called, and we're going to hear what they have to say now. I want to turn to Pam in Kansas City, Kansas. Hi, Pam.
Hi. I'm in my 70s, and I was in the restaurant business like 50 years ago, and I just want to compliment everybody on their incredible perceptive responses to this issue, you know, the economic and the social issues, class issues. I always worked the back of the house, but I also saw what was going on in the front of the house and had a lot of concerns about what was going on both sides of the track, so to speak. And I wanted to address the gentleman who deals with older people who come into the restaurant. And I want to address this to older people listening. If you order lemon water, which I do, because I think the price of beverages is outrageous, and you share a meal, leave a really good tip as if both of you had a complete meal. Because I think what the guys have been saying is then they see that they're sort of on the cheap. And as far as all the other issues, I think your people that have spoken out about this are incredible. I mean, I just really compliment everybody on their ability to see what's really going on in the world and how it affects everyone. And I was in Prairie Village one time, and a well-heeled white family came in and trashed the restaurant. And I thought, you don't have the right to do that just because somebody else is going to clean up your mess. So thank you for this show. It was an excellent show.
Thank you, Pam. So Yeah, Pam was talking just about her observations from the back of the house and some tips for diners there. I want to get to one of our other callers. We've got Joe in Lee's Summit. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I've been on hold a long time, and your call-in guy talked to me and twice let me know that I was on hold and everything. And I told him he'd be a good server because he's got it. He's got the other perspective versus self-perspective or self-interest. I agree when they say the measure of a man is how you treat somebody who can't retaliate or you want nothing from. I've had tables with three-figure bills that have tipped nothing, those with no bill that have tipped heavy. To give one example, having worked in restaurants and hotels, they got a call for 5 glasses for room service, no charge, and my coworker goes, I don't want this. I can't get any tip off it. I'm like, I'll take it. So I set up a nice cloth tray, glasses overturned with mints underneath, folded napkins, nested, 5 of them, nice layout, took it up to the room, and room service, they open, and they just reached out their hand, keeping eye contact, like, and then they all of a sudden look down and saw the tray, and they pause, and they go, honey, get my wallet. So it's all about service, anticipating, being observant, facilitating the meal, not upstaging it, especially if it's a two-person date. I mean, they're on show. If you have business clients, they shouldn't have, if you can hear them talking about writing notes, grab some pens and papers and just set them on the corner of the table as you pass without interrupting the meeting. And that's how things work. Other perspective, you talk about employers and what they should pay. We'll also look at the employer perspective. Traffic flow in a restaurant or a hotel, it goes up and down, and tips scale directly to traffic. And if you're a good waiter, you realize that, and you play the averages. You don't play one person one way or another. You just keep a consistent game like in Vegas. And if you take pride in your work, it'll pay off in the long run. But if you get ticked off because of one bad table and you carry that to the next couple tables, you're just going to trash your own day.
Well, so
with regard to race and everything,
but Joe,
it's a lot easier to track. It's a lot easier to track how much they get. But it's a lot harder to track what service they're providing, and I agree with the caller. It's like if you train anybody right, the money will come and it'll take care of itself. But if you don't take care of the customer, over the long run, you probably won't last as a waiter.
Joe, can I back up to something else you said? The idea is
Certainly.
There a personality that thrives in this tipping environment? And it sounds like you're comparing that personality to a gambler.
No, not with a gambler, but with somebody who's a humanist. In other words, it's almost like some people would say karma. What goes around comes around. So, and it is applying it a bit because you're getting money and everything like that, you know, in gambling. But, you know, whether it's gambling or you're playing baseball, you're stepping up to the plate, you can strike out and have a bad thing, but you stay with a good form and eventually that streak blank. It's just like coin flips. You may get 10 heads in a row, but the odds over the long run will come out 50-50.
This is interesting.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's interesting, though, in the sense that we've also heard that the data does show that the quality of service only very weakly, if at all, correlates to the size of tips someone leaves. And so
I can tell you why.
There's so much vigorous nodding going on in this room. But I think that is there something to be said for the belief in that truth to give us an illusion of control on both sides of the equation? Like, I can control my service and you can control your tip? And
well, there's a self-fulfilling philosophy, but also, like we mentioned in research, it's a lot easier to get data on one side than the other. So it's really easy to see how much the person gets as a tip. It's a lot harder to see how much service the customers were getting from that server. Yeah. And over the long run, you're going to have a lot of different servers and different server types. When you average them all together, yeah, you're not going to see much. But what you want to look for is those who are putting out better service. Think of if you're hiring or staffing a restaurant, you're going to look for a higher, more attentive to detail, quality servers, sharp, attentive, efficient, economy of motion, full hands out or full hands in, full hands out. You heard people in the restaurant clear tables as you're coming back, take food out, loop your tables so you're not just going back and forth like in a star formation, communicate with your tables. Big pet peeve, don't ask somebody how their meal is when they take a bite of food, and then when they don't say anything because they're chewing, walk off. Just pause. You can give them a thumbs up or thumbs down so
Joe,
they don't have to open their mouth.
These tips are fascinating, and I thank you so much. I'm going to get a little response, and I'm going to try to get to some of our other callers, but thank you so much for calling.
Yeah, just don't average everybody at all and do your game.
Okay.
So, thank you.
Michelle, any response to this?
I'm probably the least likely person to ask this question to, because I'm not the one whose job is about making sure that people have a really good experience when they're eating out. So, yeah.
You seemed enthusiastic to say something, but...
Again, it gets back to what I said earlier. It's just interesting, the concept of tipping. Tipping is based after a transaction. It's after the transaction. I mean, I can't say that enough, because anything that people try to say about, well, I did this, I did that. Okay, that's great. But at the end of the day, I mean, people usually have decided what they're going to tip when they walk in the restaurant. I mean, most people are a 15 to 20% tipper, and that may vary based on the service, but usually not dramatically.
Let's talk to Andy in Mission Hills. Hi, Andy.
Hello. I was calling about traveling abroad and that they do not have a tipping system in most restaurants. It's built into the tab, which makes it awesome. In that there's nothing to compute or figure out or judge how the service was good or poor. But I do notice that there is a drawback in that, unless it's a 4-star, a 5-star, a Michelin star restaurant, the servers take the attitude of getting to you when they can get to you. There's no incentive for them to rush.
So, yeah, the sort of volume doesn't pay.
Correct.
Okay, and you don't think that that has anything to do with just like different cultural ideas about the pace of eating?
Well, there is that factor. You're right. As American, you have to remind yourself to slow down. And that abroad, it's usually an experience that you're going for. Whereas I'm just usually to get in, get the food, and get out.
Because culturally, it could be that people don't want to rush you, but you never know. I'm curious about this. This kind of gets back to what you were saying, Aaron, about volume being where good work as a server pays more in tips.
Sure. I actually think that if I had been 16, 18 years old and started serving and it had moved to non-tipping, I would not be in this industry, because you put up with too much and work too hard to not have, you know, your ability or your interest in going over the top for the guest to be rewarded. I mean, I don't know many servers that I think are excellent servers that would do this job without tips. I just don't.
Let's talk quickly with Kristen and Lawrence. Kristen, we just have a little while left.
Hi. I just wanted to say that going back to the racial issue and African Americans who come in to eat, I would say as a white server, I try especially hard to provide them with good service, because I have heard my fellow servers not want that table or talk about how African Americans tip. And for me, sometimes serving, a lot of times, it's not just about the money. I know we're all here to make money, but it's also to provide everybody with a good service. You don't know what kind of day they've had. You can make a good day and a bad day. And I've had Caucasian clients come in and say what a good job I did and tip nothing, but yet when it comes to Caucasians, we just say, oh, well, that's just one table. And when it's an African American, oh, well, they never tip well. So I just feel like even as a Caucasian server, I try extra hard, because I do know that idea is out there, and I think it's hurtful.
Well, Kristen, thanks for that call. I mean, is there... It sounds like Kristen takes it upon herself to use her position on the front lines there really well. David, we haven't heard from you in a while.
I think in every situation, you know, the statistics, if you look into the data sizes, they're not always going to be there. We all know that when someone goes above and beyond for us in a tip position, that we tip more. We know that if we can go out there and give somebody an exceptional experience, that it's more likely than not going to turn around in the tip. And every single guest you give that to, that's what tipping's all about.
Well, our time is up. Thank you so much to everyone who called in today. And thanks to our guests, Michelle Tyrene Johnson, KCUR's race and culture reporter. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Aaron McZee with us from a local restaurant, which shall go unnamed. Thank you.
Thank you.
David Hayden, author of Tip Squared, Tips for Improving Your Tips. Great having you.
Thanks for having me.
And we spoke earlier in the hour with Steve DeBlonica, author of Keep the Change. You can listen back to this discussion at kcur.org/centralstandard and keep talking to us on Twitter. We are at KCURCST. Tomorrow, what are the best practices for teaching kids to learn to read? It's a fascinating process with a lot of research behind it, but is that research being implemented in local schools? Tune in tomorrow at 10. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Coy Duggar, and Suzanne Hogan. I'm Gina Kaufman.